You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Lynn, look, the Chicago Cubs made all the noise that there was to be made at the winter meetings. It has been an active offseason for this team. Theo Epstein and Joe Maddon have had a lot to talk about now. As the broadcasters, you look at this team, a lot of things addressed to this point. Is there more to be done, or are the Cubs pretty much ready to go?
Well, I'm not sure that Theo Epstein is ever quite satisfied. That's number one. he worries and has talked in the past about trying to, quote, win the offseason. The idea here is to win the World Series, not to garner the most headlines in the offseason. So these moves were made simply to improve the ball club, not necessarily to make headlines. But when you're coming off a 97-win campaign, it would be pretty easy to not mess with things. And while the nucleus remains intact, I think the sweep at the hands of the Mets in the National League Championship Series, while you don't want to overreact, I think the bottom line was the Cubs need a little more contact in their lineup. So Ben Zobrist added to the mix, Jason Hayward, who's an elite player all around, and then some rotation depth with John Lackey, who by the end of the season and into the playoffs was one of the top two or three starters for the St. Louis Cardinals. So you steal away Lackey and Hayward from your top rival in the division. You bring in a guy in Ben Zobrist who played for Joe Maddon for 9 seasons in Tampa Bay. Brings a lot of versatility. I think he's going to be the everyday second baseman, but obviously late in a game in a National League ballpark can play a lot of different positions. He's a switch hitter. So I think it really sets up well for Joe in his second year as the Cubs manager.
I would say they set up well. You mentioned, taking two big pieces from their division rival, the St. Louis Cardinals, who have been relatively quiet this offseason. It has long been the Cardinals' division to kind of lord over. The Cubs certainly made a run at it in 2015. Do you see this now, though, as the Cubs' division to lose?
I think it's the Cardinals' division until it's not. Sounds like an obvious statement, but you're right. To sit here and look at what's gone on this offseason and say that the Cardinals are going away would be foolish. They always find a way. They've got a lot of talent on their roster. We don't know what their opening day roster will exactly look like, Dave, but for me, I think the health of Carlos Martinez, Adam Wainwright returning, and then the continued health of two veteran guys who have been Cub killers in their career, and that's Matt Holliday and Yadier Molina. And if those guys can stay on the field for a majority of 2016, I think the Cardinals will be right there as they always are. And then you've got the Pittsburgh Pirates who are saying, hey, guys, don't forget about us. We won 98 games last year. So this division boasted the top three teams in terms of regular season record last season. So the Cubs have just upped the ante, I think. And it's now, I guess, up to the Cardinals and the Pirates to respond. But I don't think either of those organizations is necessarily going to be intimidated by what the Cubs have done. I expect these three teams to be the cream of the crop once again next season.
Is it a silly thing to worry about expectations in a market? I mean, the Cubs, they're a great story, always a great story. I can't think in recent years of an offseason that would have generated as much optimism as Theo Epstein and company have generated this year. What about those expectations and how all that plays out in Chicago at Wrigley Field?
Well, you're right. It was a conversation that was had here toward the end of this past season when the Cubs made their run all the way to the NLCS. In a lot of people's minds, they got there maybe a year ahead of time. And so if the Cubs team could ever, quote, fly under the radar, I think it was the 2015 97 win, Chicago Cubs. But that's in the past now. You're right. The expectations will be sky high. I would have a hard time believing going into spring training that there would be a higher team on all the Las Vegas, odds to win the World Series. People want to see the Cubs do well. They want to see them break the drought. And I think there will be a ton of expectations. Having said that, I think Joe Maddon welcomes that. I don't think Theo Epstein minds it. But it's very difficult to win 97 games. So theoretically, this could be a better team on paper in 2016 and maybe even a team that wins the division but doesn't win as many games as it did last year. It's such a tough division. It's a very tough league at the top. You know, the Diamondbacks went out, got Zach Greinke. We know the Dodgers aren't afraid to spend money. I think the Nationals will rebound from the year they had. The Mets have all that young starting pitching. So it's a very difficult league, and as good as the Cubs are on paper right now, I don't think they're going to take anything for granted.
What do you think the next, as we've had a little time from winter meetings, what's the next domino to fall for them?
Well, you know, it's interesting. At the winter meetings, they traded Adam Lind, who was the most obvious player to be dealt. You know, they picked up that option for next season. I don't think anybody expected him to don a Brewers uniform. So that was a sort of an easy move to make. Now the players left, since K-Rod also has already been traded. The players left are a little more tricky because you're talking about guys who there isn't the same urgency to trade in that they're signed for next season and beyond. Now, catcher Jonathan Lucroy is a name that came up at the winter meeting. We've talked about it, Dave, a tricky case for this Brewers team in that he's so low cost for the next 2 years, less than $10 million total. He's a really good guy to help you grow a young starting rotation. But those are also reasons that make him extremely valuable on the trade market. It seems like the Texas Rangers have shown some interest, and the possibility of a trade is certainly there. So that's one that I think there's been some healthy debate inside the Brewers front office and in that suite at the winter meetings and now back in Miller Park in terms of what's the best way to use this value. Because remember, if they don't trade him this winter, you can trade him at the trade deadline, and you can also look to move him next winter. And if he has a bounce-back offensive season, gets back to the level he was 2 years ago when he was fourth in the MVP ballot, and you're talking about a really valuable guy. So I think that is still, falls in the category of there's a possibility to be traded, but there isn't the same sense of urgency as there was with, say, Adam Lind. Now, the same, I think, goes for some of these Brewers relievers. You're looking at guys like Jason Mott getting a two-year deal. The price for relief on this market is incredibly high. And the Brewers, even after trading Francisco Rodriguez, feel like they've got some depth in that area. These are all club-controlled players. And for example, one of them is Will Smith, an extremely talented left-handed pitcher, great slider, has shown an ability to get lefties and righties out. You could close with him if you wanted. You could use him as an eighth-inning guy in that he can attack hitters from both sides of the plate. Just entering arbitration, so he's got 3 years of club control left. That's a pretty valuable piece as well, but the same caveat holds that they don't need to trade him right now. You could go into the season, even as a rebuilding club, not expecting to win in 2016, and still get value for him down the road. And I think if you go down and continue down this path and look at some of the other Brewers players who could be traded, their shortstop, Gene Segura, you know, maybe Ryan Braun, if somebody really wants to grab that contract. Maybe Chris Davis, their left fielder, Scooter Jeanette, their second baseman. These are all players who are signed for multiple years, or at least under club control for multiple years, and in some cases, many years. So they're different types of deals than the one David Stearns has already completed.
Last week, we spent a little time talking about the Reds' rebuild, or this tear down and rebuild that they're in the middle of. And we talked a little bit about Chapman. Maybe an interesting angle on the Chapman situation that we didn't get into last week. If his suspension exceeds 34 days, it's such a random number, but if he were to be suspended for better than 34 days, it would push back his free agency clock just enough to get a second year of controllability. Does that then enhance his value on the trade market? Like, might this work in their favor?
That was a whole string of ifs, but yeah, it obviously, if you've got another year of control, it would enhance his trade value. But I think all of that's going to come down to, that's going to be a delicate negotiation between his agent and the Players Association and Major League Baseball. I don't think we're to that point yet. That would be a pretty long suspension. That would be, what is that, 20% of a season or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that we're there yet. I think all we know right now is that Aroldis Chapman is radioactive. Until this thing is resolved, he's not going to be traded. No team would touch him. And then even after this, he didn't have a reputation being a great teammate anyway. And so So then we step forward and you say, okay, is this a guy, considering his past, considering his free agency, considering his talent, that we want on our club? And I, you know, just based on talking to clubs right now, he's not even on the radar until there's more answers.
Okay. All right. Well, you've seen these types of rebuilds before, and I think fans justifiably have questions that maybe you can shed a little light. You look at this Reds team, and they had, you know, Todd Frazier at third base, Joey Votto at first base, had Phillips at second base. That's a pretty nice-looking infield. You had Chapman, the most electric closer in the game, finishing contest. You had Jay Bruce in the outfield. I mean, they had some pretty good pieces here. Why is it that there's pressure or a need necessarily to blow something like this up?
Well, I you know, it's funny you say that. I looked at their club last year, you know, standing in their clubhouse in spring training. In fact, I was in there so long that they called the cops and said, well, why is that guy standing in here? Get him out of here. You look around and you think, okay, if Homer Bailey's what we think he is, Jay Bruce has a bounce back season, we got a pretty good club here. Because, like you said, Frazier, Phillips, Votto, and Billy Hamilton's an intriguing guy in center field. Just didn't work out. And there was a point where then you look at the division. You look at where the Cubs are. Cubs are building a monster. You look at where the Cardinals are. They're going to win every year. The Pirates are as well-run as any franchise in baseball. And as long as they have McCutchen, they got a chance to win. So you're thinking, you know, Billy, it's the old Billy Bean thing. If you're not moving forward or back, you know, if you're staying still, you're nowhere. So you had to take – the hardest thing to do in sports, I think, is to take a realistic look at where you're at and say and evaluate yourself. And the Reds, to their credit, to Bob Castellini's credit, and Walt Jocketty's credit, they took a look at themselves and said, you know what, we're not close. And so they started fast-forwarding those young guys, pitchers, to the big leagues last year. And the decision now is we're going to tear down as much as we can. Having said that, you know, Homer Bailey's not tradable right now. I'm not sure Jay Bruce is tradable right now, and given his production, although he translates certainly as a platoon player. And then Joey Votto has $200 million left on his contract over the next 8 years. That's hard to trade regardless. I know the Giants have kicked the tires on Votto, but it's pretty large getting a deal like that done, because you'd want them to pick up some of the money.
Is this what we're seeing, you know, in Cincinnati, maybe similar, very similar to what we saw in Houston in recent years? The Brewers are trying to replicate the same thing. This sort of extreme blow-up, is this a newer phenomena and something that we're going to see with more regularity now? Is this just cycles that every team is going to go through now? You're going to have a little run of success, you're just going to completely obliterate it and suffer for a couple of years and try and rebuild? Is that what we're looking at?
It's a reminder that big contracts can be painful and they can limit your flexibility and what you can do. And, you know, a couple of years ago, maybe even a year ago, you and I would have looked at the Astros and go, do they know what the heck they're doing? I mean, you know, are they headed on the path back? And by midseason last year, people like Billy Bean were referring to it as the Astros model. Just take your lumps in the short term, get it right in player development, and you'll see it come to fruition. But the key there is that when you get young players, when you trade a Hunter Pence, you better get players that you can count on. And when you draft, and you better be right on George Springer and Carlos Correa, and you better find a jewel in your farm system, a Dallas Keuchel and all that. You know, player development is almost a voodoo, in that you got to look at a kid at 16, 17, or 18 and try to translate what he's going to be like, both physically and mentally, at 23, 24. You know, scouts say you want me to be Houdini and Evel Knievel all at the same time. So it's an uncertain path. And in a place like Cincinnati, where they've won championships, the bar is set high, there's obviously a lot of disgruntlement right now, because fans tend to think it's just about spending more money. Well, you know, the track record of recent years says, no, it's not. The last 10 World Series champions have had a payroll rank of 8. You look at the Cardinals, they're not spending a ton of money. And the Giants spend money, but not a ton of money. The high spenders are not being rewarded at this point.
You know, some teams, or teams, they're looking at getting rid of a lot of players. Other teams, and the Pirates among them, are those teams building toward, you know, a hopeful 2016. on this wish list for the Pirates, you know, what are they hoping Santa brings? You know, they've already made a couple of moves, but what's the next big ticket item they want?
I think they'd like to find a starting pitcher under the tree, for one. They have no fifth starter at this point, so they need to find somebody, whether it's via trade or free agency. Neil Huntington has said that they're working hard on both fronts to bring in somebody to, essentially, we're still talking about replacing the spot left open by A.J. Burnett and Jay Happ. I think that's definitely their priority. Whether, you know, that comes sooner or later, it's hard to say, but, you know, when they traded Charlie Morton earlier this offseason, Neil Huntington said he knew that blindly. So they've clearly got something in the works. It's just a matter of waiting to see how it all falls together.
Okay, interesting. There's been so much activity among starting pitchers, and we're talking mostly the, you know, the really high-end starting pitchers. Pirates aren't looking to dump a ton of money or pick up a real long-term contract that way then, right? They're looking for that guy maybe a little more controllable or a little more affordable. What do you anticipate in that spot?
Yeah, I think ideally they could find somebody who is controllable for a couple of years. Obviously, affordable would be a bonus to that. But they do have some money to spend after, you know, getting rid of Pedro Alvarez, trading Charlie Morton, and even trading Neil Walker. That money was kind of a wash with Jonathan Meese, who they acquired in return. They probably got $20 million or so that they can spend this offseason, because most likely their payroll is going to be above $100 million for the first time in franchise history. But the thing is, you can't put all of that money toward one spot. They've got a couple of holes to fill, so you kind of have to prioritize, you know, quality over quantity to a certain extent. Do you want to go all in with that money on one position and then have to backfill the rest, you know, affordably, or do you want to spread that out and try to get a little more value at each position rather than all of your value at one?
You hate to get too excited about things in December in particular, but is there a chance? I'm sure there are Pirates fans asking the same question. Jameson Taillon, is he getting to the point where we can begin to expect him, you know, to bubble up, I don't know, this year, next year? What kind of timeline do you think there is right now on Taillon?
I think it's fair to expect him at some point in the majors in 2016. I know he's probably not – Neil Huntington has said they're basically closing the window on the idea of him making the team out of spring training just because he's been injured for the better part of the last 2 years. He hasn't played an affiliated game since 2013. So he's got some, you know, some work to do to make up for lost time. But no, I think it's completely fair that you could see him in 2016. This is an advanced pitcher when we last saw him. And he said that, you know, before the second injury, the hernia surgery, he was actually throwing the ball better than he ever has. I think the Pirates are excited to see what he could do toward the end of the year. And, you know, at this point, there seems like they will make a role for him if he's ready.
For this edition of the Cardinals podcast, it is Matt Wehmeyer pinch hitting for Dave Raymond. I am joined right now by MLB.com Cardinals reporter Jennifer Langosch. Been a bit of a rough offseason for this team, especially on the pitching front. Lance Lynn undergoing Tommy John surgery, or he will. John Lackey is now a Cub, but the team agrees to a 5-year, $80 million deal with Mike Leake. Just give us your thoughts on that deal.
Yeah, I mean, this is really the first big move of the Cardinals offseason. Certainly they had tried to go big earlier, missing on David Price and Jason Hayward. I think Cardinals Nation had gotten a little bit restless in recent weeks, wondering what the Cardinals were going to do or if they were going to do anything. Really what they were looking at with this signing is just shoring up a rotation. They have Adam Wainwright, Michael Walker, Jaime Garcia, and Carlos Martinez all coming back, but a little questionable how they were going to fill that fifth spot in the rotation now with John Lackey gone and Lance Lynn on the shelf. So Mike Leake offers them some stability there, offers them some innings. And at 28 years old, the Cardinals believe they're still buying in the peak years of his career. So this is probably the biggest move the Cardinals will make this offseason, certainly committing $80 million reportedly for a 5-year deal. It is uncharted territory for this organization. But, again, get somebody that can really fill in that rotation in that 1-5. Looks pretty set for this team.
And Jennifer, you brought up David Price, how the Cardinals kind of missed out on the sweepstakes there. He ends up signing with the Red Sox. I think they had to have known they were going to lose John Lackey, and then nobody saw Lance Lynn coming with the Tommy John surgery, which will keep him out of the 2016 season. So I guess what I'm asking is, was Mike Leake kind of option C or D for this team, or had he been on the Cardinals' radar nonetheless since the offseason began?
Yeah, you know, it's been an interesting couple months here for the Cardinals. Really, when their offseason began after they were eliminated in October, they weren't anticipating diving into that starting pitching market, and that was really because, you know, at that point, Lance Lynn was healthy, and you looked at their rotation 1-5, and it seemed pretty set even with John Lackey on his way out. Things changed, however, in mid-November when it was determined that Lynn needed surgery, that he'd miss next season. All of a sudden, the Cardinals felt that they needed to shore up their rotation depth. So David Price was certainly a unique case for the Cardinals. They've said as much. They really thought he wanted to play in St. Louis, which is one of the reasons why they were so comfortable making such a robust offer to him. Once he declined it, then they kind of went down and looked in this middle-tier market. They weren't interested in a Zach Greinke type. They never went into the bidding there. So Mike Leake really became a target after David Price went off the board. Cardinals like a couple things about him, not only his durability, not only a good record of health, but also the fact that they don't have to lose a draft pick by signing him. The fact that Mike Leake was traded midseason last year meant he could not receive any qualifying offer, and because of that, the Cardinals retained their first-round draft pick. So kind of all combined, the price was right for the Cardinals, and it's what made him the right fit over some of the other free agent starters we still see in the market.
And, of course, at some point, Mike Leake is going to be throwing his pitches to Yadier Molina behind the plate, but that might not happen right away, as Molina had a bit of a setback with his thumb, I believe. What is the health status on him? Is this a big deal or something that is just going to be a minor hiccup and Molina should be okay?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's somewhat of a big deal in that, you know, 2 months after he had thumb surgery, they essentially went back in and had to do the whole procedure over again. You know, and during his recovery, he began to feel some of the same discomfort that he initially had. This is, you know, dating back to an injury he sustained in September. Then they went and they did an MRI a couple weeks ago and realized that there had been no healing taken place. So he had that surgery last week. He's expected to be in a cast till about middle or end of January. He will not be able to swing a bat in February and maybe not even into mid to late March. So Cardinals still say they're optimistic that he'll be ready to go by opening day. That being said, what he's going to be able to do in spring training is going to be very, very limited, and it's just going to depend on how quickly that strength comes back in his thumb. But certainly the Cardinals are hopeful that, that kind of a do-over of this surgery works. Good news is that they were able to, you know, kind of identify this still in December with time to remaining for him to heal. Bad news is, of course, is that it's going to cut into his preparation for next year. Them having signed Brian Pena certainly, you know, augments their backup options. So might see a little bit more Brian Pena early in the season than we anticipated.